and welcome to episode 16 of The Two Tones. Tony Moclair, myself, and the beast, Tony DeBolfo. How are you, Tone?
Not too bad at all, Tony. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. It's a school holidays edition, so it might be a bit shorter today. In the studio with me, my six-year-old daughter, who is taught by the sister at her primary school of Anthony Francina.
Is that so?
There you go.
Is that so? I hope he shows the right level of restraint amongst the kiddies compared with the manic ferocity with which he attacked the ball and the opponent in his heyday here, Tone.
Has there ever been another number 45 at the Carlton Football Club? Or does he stand alone wearing that jumper?
There's a question without notice. 45, there wouldn't be too many that have gone around in it, I wouldn't have thought, no. Over the journey. Might have to check on that.
He could be possibly the only one. You know, well, of course, Kuta had 43 because that was the year of his mother's birth.
Yes, I think Anthony's travelling solo on the number 45 locker.
Well, he's apparently kicked on in post-football. He's doing very well. He's working in the finance industry, I believe. And and we both say a big hello to Anthony Francina.
And a very loyal Carlton man, often seen at Carlton games to this day, still follows them with a real passion and fervour.
Good work, good work. Now, Tone, your thoughts on the Carlton Bulldogs game last
week? Again, Tony, you can't fault the commitment of the players to the contest of the weekend. And again, it was something like 35,000+ people
good
there.
Good turnout.
So I think the Carlton faithful are bored. They like what they see in terms of the progress of the team and under John Barker's tutelage. And let's be honest, we had our chances to take that game. Mm. There were a lot of lost opportunities. You know, I think of the moment with Levi Casbolt and Cameron Wood and, the Benny Hill music there. But there were moments in the game where, you know, it was very much a case of opportunity lost. And we regret not getting the points there, but we have no time to dwell, Tone. We move on and look towards the Tigers this Friday night.
Well, certainly not hoping of a repeat of clunkers like those that we witnessed the other night. But this is, to me, this is a really interesting game because I was talking to somebody about it. We debuted round one against Richmond and set the pattern, you could almost say. Round one, sluggish effort, and we got roundly done. Richmond are facing a different Carlton this time, and it's going to be a different game of footy.
That's a fair point. You know, we hark back, as you say, to that opening game, and, you know, Daisy Thomas does his shoulder in the first minute of the year, and as you said, that set the tone for one of the most traumatic periods of Carlton history for the next two to three months. Haven't we come a long way? You know, when you think about, as you said, where we were, and you know, juxtapose that against where we are now, and you can't believe it's the same group of players going around. I mean, it's been a 180 degree reversal, hasn't it? And it's been quite outstanding. And if ever there was a roller coaster season in the history of the Carlton Football Club, then 2015 has surely been it.
Well, this is, you know, the great chance to get along and, I guess, reset the clock, if you like. Go and enjoy a Richmond-Carlton clash knowing that it's going to be a contest, because round one it certainly wasn't, as you say. What are we looking out for, Tone? What are, you know, the key matchups, and what are you most excited or interested about seeing on Friday night?
Yes, I think it is worth noting that Richmond will surely be wanting for height and size where they need it.
Because Marich is out.
Marich is out suspended, and Griffiths has done a shoulder, so he won't be there as a, you know, fairly focal point for the Tigers in attack. So that might be an area with which Carlton can really look at, gaining the ascendancy. And I think, I know it's early in the week, but I'd suspect that we'll get a few players back available that have had brief layoffs through injury. We look at Menzel, Carazzo, Sam Doherty and Sam Rowe are all in the frame, as far as I know, at this stage of the week. So I think that the team should, by and large, go in with a fairly strong competitive lineup, notwithstanding the fact that, you know, Nick Graham's out for three with a foot. So, I think, yes, after recent weeks, the way the team's been travelling given the availability of players, I think Carlton has every right to be confident going into this game. Not overly so. You know, Richmond are obviously playing for plenty. I mean, they're trying to cement their place in the upper echelons of the ladder. So they are a bona fide opponent. But I think the way the players are approaching their footy at the moment, I don't think there'll be any fears held. You know, and I dare say that all the players will be really looking forward to the major challenge that Richmond presents. So I think there's a lot to look forward to with this game and you know, just one of a myriad of reasons why Carlton supporters should get along. And it is heartening to say that the supporters are turning out again in their droves.
Well, there is something about these games. I know we've said it before, but, you know, you get your, say, Carlton-Collingwood clashes, you get Carlton-Essendon clashes. There is something distinct about all of them, and especially so against Richmond.
I mean, yes.
If we ignore, say, round one, but we go back to that final where Juddy just tore Richmond a new one in the third quarter, it was an astonishing display of football.
It was great.
You know, and the three 15-metre penalties in the first quarter, that was a game, you know.
That's true.
Equal to the legend of many contests.
Very, very true, Tony. And conducting research recently for the book that I'm writing for the club, there's a section.
Give it a plug, Tone, the title?
The Icon Collection, the Carlton Collection, I think it is, part of the Icon series.
And available through carltonfc.com.au.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Tone, for that little shameless plug. But I have been researching the history of the rivalry, Carlton-Collingwood, Carlton-Essendon, Carlton-Richmond, and it's fair to say that of all the rivals, that Richmond is the one that has posted so many difficulties for the Carlton Football Club traditionally. I think it's 4-2 their way in terms of grand finals won.
What?
And yet I think we've got three each with Essendon. But the 99 prelim tips us over the line there.
Thank you.
And, of course, with Collingwood, it's five of the last six have gone our way. So Richmond is the team that you would say, the club that you would say is the genuine rival for the Carlton Football Club.
Am I right in thinking they may have been the fly in the ointment as far as us getting the four-peat between 79 and 82? I know they got 1980, but were we at all the chance of, you know, getting up in 1980?
1980 was the one that got away, you know. Look, Pierce Jones, he's often, you know, been criticised for, you know, not getting the good guys over the line in 1980. But you have to remember that he took over at a tumultuous period in Carlton history. You know, the president and Jeselenko, you know, were ousted by the members in that memorable showdown at Festival Hall. And, you know, Pierce Jones, to his credit, you know, answered the call and took Carlton on a very difficult period in its history. Whether, you know, had Jezza stayed, would Carlton have gone all the way? We shall never know. But let's be honest, that period from 79 through to 82, David Parkin has often said it's a team that should be held in the esteem for which Brisbane, those great teams of Brisbane in the early 2000s were. You know, Parko's under no illusions. This was one of the greatest teams he ever coached of any club. So we'll never know the answer to that story about the question about 1980, Tone, but let's be grateful for three out of four.
Yes.
It wasn't bad.
Let's count our blessings when we have them. I've mentioned the recent final. Is there any kind of Carlton-Richmond game of the last 10 years or so that really sticks in your mind as...
Look, it's got to be that final, doesn't it? You know, the Gallet goal. You know, I was talking this week to Jovan, I think his name is, who is the president of Carlton Cheer Squad. And he was talking about, you know, how the cheer squads, they get their tickets behind the goals every week, you know, every venue in the country. And we were talking about that moment in time. And, you know, I was on the wing watching Jeff Gallet running towards that Ponsford stand goals.
Yeah.
And I said to you, man, you would have been behind the goals seeing Jeff running towards you. And he said, I can't ever forget that seeing that amigo, you know, running towards me. And he said, you know, just the expectation of what was to follow there. He rated it as probably the greatest moment of his time supporting Carlton and being president of the cheer squad.
Yeah.
And I think he's been involved with the cheer squad since 2001. So that moment, I mean, you know, stands in memory. And I think I've mentioned on air before, Tony, about, you know, the boys in the coach's box that day trying to maintain, you know, their composure, but kicking each other under the table as Jeff was making that charge. One of the great moments in time. Look, there have been so many. You know, my experience is 82, one of the great grand finals of all time. It had everything, you know, had the fights, had the streaker. That game's been undersold because I think it's one of the great grand finals, you know, that period. And 72 grand final was the first grand final I ever saw. I was speaking to Stephen Sylvanian here the other day, and we talked about the 72 grand final. He said, "Yeah, I was there." And I said, "Well, what were you?" And he said, "We had five." I think he was sitting on Rita's lap.
But
he was there. And I just remember that game like it was yesterday. And, you know, Soss said to me, he said, "What are your favourite Carlton premierships?" And I said, "Well, they're the bookends, 72, 95. The first one I saw and the last one I saw, because in both games, Carlton played what I would call near perfection in both, you know, and you knew very early on the piece that there was no way this team was going to get conquered on this particular day, you know. So that's what I remember about Richmond games.
Yeah, well, I know it's been brought up before 100 times, but it's still a wonderful memory. Earl Spalding spoiled.
That
just said to Geelong, this is not your day.
That's very true. You know, the die was cast pretty early, wasn't it?
And the 72 you mentioned, that was the grand final that got, well, the boys in my family at the very least barracking for Carlton, having arrived in Australia January 1973 Ireland. And, Mildura full of Italians, they're all barracking for Carlton. So my brother coming back from the Catholic primary school there just had one team in mind.
Wow.
That's how it started.
It's a great story. I love that story.
It's funny you mentioned that. Dylan Buckley not being nominated.
Oh, jeez. I don't know what your
thoughts on that.
Oh, look, seriously. I happened to be impeccably placed, Tony, when that goal was kicked. You know, when you can see, you know, the line between the centre of the goals and the ball?
Yeah.
And it was never going to miss. It was an unbelievable snap. I don't know what they're thinking down there. I mean, that was an outstanding piece of individual play.
It was genius.
Oh, that was sheer genius, you know. And look, I think notwithstanding that horrific oversight, isn't it magnificent to see Dylan Buckley out there at the moment and the way that he's attacking the contest?
Yeah.
And, but you know, he, I think, you know, they're talking about that little helmeted bloke for the Bulldogs at play last week, but I think we have a cult hero in Dylan Buckley.
Yeah.
The supporters love the way he goes about it. You know, they remember Jimmy and Chip off the old block, and I think it's just so heartening to see with every game the likes of Dylan Buckley asserting themselves, you know, as Carlton senior league players, not only this year but next year and tomorrow. And I think with Dylan, his buoyancy, and you know, it's infectious. It rubs off on the people, and they love seeing the way he goes about his work. Because here is a player, I think, that truly values the CFC monogram on his chest, and he understands the history of the club and what it means. And in this day and age, where players can come from hither and thither, it's magnificent to see a player still going around for whom the ethos of Carlton still means so much. And I think that's what I get from Dylan Buckley anyway. And I think if you're not buoyed by the way that he plays, and you're a rock, aren't you?
Pay that. It's the, you know, that ethos, that love of Carlton is baked into his DNA.
Absolutely.
Yeah, his emergence has been thrilling to watch. We mentioned him a lot on the podcast because of goals like the other night against Footscray, because of those second, third, fourth efforts, because of running, chasing, and he's exhilarating to watch.
It's magnificent.
If anybody embodies the resurgence, you know, and the great history of this club, it's a player like Dylan Buckley.
Very well said. I couldn't agree more, Tone.
Now, again, Buckley not being nominated, if you wanted to weave this or embroider this into a broader narrative of Carlton getting done over yet again. Oh. And never, anyway, I'm not going to bang on too much about it, but
I'll feel free to beg.
As a double standard, Jay Short's getting off for a spear tackle with pretzel-like logic from the AFL. Oh. I mean, it was astonishing. But we lose Bryce for 2 weeks for an identical tackle. Explain that if you will.
If only I could, Tony. Words fail me. You know, I can't. You know, I can't think for the esteemed members of the MRP. But you do come away mystified. You know, from these rulings. So it's the consistency or lack thereof. You know, I don't quite get it. I heard a good theory yesterday. I think it was put up by Scott Lucas on air that maybe what they should do is if a player is KO'd in a tackle, that it's a mandatory 1 week penalty. So there's no ambiguity. Players then know, okay, it's a week. You know, I think it's the inconsistency. You know, the inconsistent nature of the call that are upsetting people, you know. And I know all cases are different, but maybe something like this, maybe there has to be a blanket ruling, you know, that, you know, one size fits all and that...
You would think. You know, because, you know, Bryce Gibbs is tweeting a two-word sentence, I'm confused. You know, you're not Robinson Crusoe, Bryce.
No, very much so. And, you know, they all tweeted, didn't they, Simo and the whole lot. So, I mean, everyone's shaking their heads. It's one of the great, you know, conundrums of our time, you know, and I just wish they'd fix it because it's frustrating.
Well, you know, we're one step closer, Tony. As I say, we just get the game umpired by four quadcopters linked to supercomputers. You take the human out of the loop and just make the umpiring of our game automated, and then you remove the debilitating factor of human error.
I'm not laughing at that, Tony, because I saw Media Watch this week where they were talking about robotic journalists.
Yeah,
so we'll all be out of a job.
Robotic journalists. It's a typical ABC journal, isn't it? Okay, Tom Fields. Let's talk about Tom Fields.
Well, Tom Fields, you know, well, they call him Barrel, I believe, these days, because every time he kicks off from the square, he's putting the ball forward of the centre circle.
And, which is how many metres?
Well...
depending on the ground, of course. But
You've got me.
I did check
this out the other day because I think it's 80. Now, Eddie had's, you know, not the greatest dimensions.
Yeah.
So I speak with some reservation, but there was a famous kick that Jeff Fearing let fly with the Moorabbin.
Yeah.
Now, wind assisted. The wind was at his back when he kicked. He was behind the centre of the ground and kicked a goal on Moorabbin, but the ball did bounce through.
Right.
So it didn't go post high. Or,
okay.
But, and then someone threw up a kick that Ben Graham delivered for Geelong, which was a fair... I think that might have been at Skilled Stadium, isn't it, these days? But look, Tom Fields has got a kick on him like a mule, and I said to Luca, our producer, that maybe what we should do is, you know, get out the theodolites of the rulers and let's measure the kick here and see how far he can actually go with his kicking on the old Carlton ground, because it would be worth the exercise, I believe.
Yeah, Tone, I know as a history man you would want him to get to kick from where Blighty kicked.
Oh, absolutely.
Is there a part of you
that wants to go post high? You know, we've gone through that exercise on our ghosts tours where we've got you know, people to step up to the plate from where Malcolm Blight kicked that goal and try their luck. We haven't had any joy from anyone finding the managing to get the ball through the big stick. So I've never seen that happen since Malcolm Blight did the deed all those years ago. But in just in respect of Tom Fields, I should say that Tom's father, Neville, who was a very good footballer for Essendon and later South Melbourne, was he was a glorious left-foot kick. I don't think he had the prodigious distance that Tom's getting with his kicking, but he was a lovely kick to position. And I think I saw Tom interviewed on Fox Footy this week where he said that Neville had been a real influence to him in working on that side of his game. And it was interesting that he held the footy a fair way back on the ball. His hands weren't central to where the ball was. It was more back. And
oh,
they were equating Quattinger with Gilchrist, you know, in the high hand grip when he played, whether that actually equates to extra distance or not, who knows? But look, let's be truthful with Tom Fields. It isn't a one off. He every time he steps up from the square to kick out, he's hitting the ball front of centre, and he is a thumping kick.
It's a delicious prospect.
It is a delicious prospect.
You know,
where's the number 37 of the great man, W. Harbs?
Come on. Is there a more blessed number in this club? Well, you could argue, yes, there is, but that is a very special number.
Yes.
The delicious prospect to see him possibly playing the seniors this year, if a lot of younger players are getting a run. It's happened against the Bulldogs, you know, the likes of Johnson and Coleman and Burkhurst.
Yes.
And it's the year for younger players. So, look, that'd be thrilling to see.
Absolutely. And I think what it does, Tone, also, not only does it, you know, give supporters a reason to go along, but it's also... So the enthusiasm and the ebullience of the players rubs off on the older players. You know, they see these kids coming through and they're really inspired by the way they go about their business. You know, and I always say with, you know, kids being selected to play senior footy, they're not going to let you down. You know, play them, let's have a look at them.
Yeah.
And you know, all power to John Barker, because we talked about this disastrous year as it was. And, you know, I think... we're getting a lot out of the season now as it happens, because we're starting to have a look at these guys and see where the future is going to take the current football club. And good on them for, you know, looking at the big picture and blooding these players and giving the opportunity to represent Carlton teams of next year and beyond. So I think it's great.
It's a magnificent work in progress. And there were so many supporters saying under the ancien regime or under the old coach, play the kids. And now Barker's doing just that. And it's fantastic.
It is fantastic. And, you know, we're going to see more of that, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead.
Now, Tone, I'm just going to put you on the spot. Another question without notice. The Ghosts of Princess Park tour, if you haven't done it and you love the Carlton Football Club, you have rocks in your heads, because having done one, it was absolutely magnificent. Hosted by yourself, Tone, you go onto the hallowed turf of Princess Park,
yes,
and you reenact many great moments in the club from the spot on the ground where they actually happened. Are we going to see that the same Ghost of Princess Park happening again over at the end of this year and into 2016?
Well, I believe so, Tony. It's been an absolute privilege to conduct the tours, and Luke, who has been with me, and we've gleaned a lot from the experience. I think what, you know, really makes it for us is the stories that you hear from people that come along on the tour that have actually lived the moment. You know, we've had people here that are at the bloodbath, you know, that saw the bloodbath from the third branch up in an old peppercorn over at the press box wing. And people that, you know, that relive those I were there the day moments. And you get a totally different take on a story you thought you knew, you know, forever and a day. So... I think it's magnificent. I said to Luca off air that I think what's happening at Carlton is there's been a massive cultural change, an ongoing cultural change here, and what we're seeing now, just part of the fabric of Carlton, that its history is being celebrated more often than it ever has been before. And, you know, there's been a lot of initiatives like that to help, you know, remind people that this is a club with a 150-year-old story that should be told. And, you know, a lot of things are happening in terms of the historical committee. And we saw the Carlton Rap program this week, which was a magnificent initiative by the club. So these are things that are really becoming ingrained into the Carlton DNA, as you said earlier. And I think the club is really benefiting for these decisions, you know, long-term decisions that hopefully become ingrained into the, you know, the current wherewithal.
Well, exactly. And it's, you know, 150 years of glorious past, and we like to think 150 years of glorious future.
Very
just
true.
Kind of riding through a bit of a rough period at the moment, but as things do, they inevitably trend better.
Yes.
Or we hope.
Yes. And you know, what's great about it, just in terms of that historic perspective, is, you know, with the RAP program, as with the Father Son Academy, we saw some of the greats of Carlton's history come back for those occasions. And, you know, we mentioned Sergio Silvani and Big Nick, and, Mil Hanna I saw at the Father-Son Academy launch. Well, during the week, you know, the great Sid Jackson came back to be part of that reconciliation program.
Yeah.
And it was just magnificent. The images of Sid walking through, you know, and grasping the smoke that was burning from the gum leaves that were, you know, ignited at the front of the entrance here, and all the staffers and the people being involved with the occasion. You know, it was, look, just a great thing to see. And it, and when you see things like that, you become even more proud of the club and what it stands for and what it represents, you know. So all power to Carlton for what it's doing.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Tone. Well, good luck to the Blues this Friday night against the Tigers.
Yes, you'll be there, Tony, on the
Certainly
concourse.
Will be. Don't worry about that. Wouldn't miss it for the world. This is hopefully, you know, a match for the ages. Fingers crossed. Thanks again, Tone. Tony DeVolfo, Tony Mope signing off for the Two Tones. Go Blues. We'll catch you next